Hello and welcome to the Lost World of Short Stories. Y'all know what day it is. It's Feature Friday. And I want to give a shout out to some listeners because we have some people who've been tuning in from the United Kingdom, from Mexico, and from France. So, hey y'all. Thanks for tuning in. It means so much to me. Y'all don't even know. To not just, you know, when I check the analytics, to not just see the U.S. up there, even though that's nice, but to see people from, you know, different places just come and tune in. And yeah, I just appreciate the love. So thank you. Before I get into it, I wanted to make an announcement that if you enjoy this podcast, you enjoy the Wednesday episodes where I share a literature nugget, as I like to call them, or you enjoy these Feature Fridays, tell us about it. You can review the podcast on my website, laurentatebooks.com. That's laurentatebooks.com. And so there's a page for testimonials if you want to see what other people are saying about it. And if you hover over the testimonial tab, there's a subpage called review. The page is just a short, simple review form. You write your review and click submit. It's super easy. And if you do it on your phone, it's even easier. The email or the review comes to my email and I post it the next day. Reviews are important for any business. They help bring, you know, new customers and in this case, new listeners. I hope to grow this community here at the Lost World of Short Stories and just to bring, bring in more Black women, more Black girls, because we need the community desperately. And I love everything about us. And so with your review, we can accomplish that goal. Also, if you are a Black woman from anywhere, okay? Not just in the U.S., but if you are from the United Kingdom, from France, from Mexico, from Europe, from anywhere, and you have a story that you want to tell, and you write poetry or short stories, personal essays about anything that you have experienced, spoken word, or my new favorite that we are welcoming on the podcast, skits. Yes, yes, I said skits. Of any genre, if you have any literature work and you are a Black woman, literally from anywhere, let me know if you are interested. Let me know if you want to submit some work. And you can submit some work, though submissions aren't officially open. If you're listening to this podcast and you want to submit it. At my email, tatelauren72@gmail.com. So that's TATELAUREN72. Like the number, 72@gmail.com. Okay, so, and then share this podcast and share it with your other friends, share it with your auntie, share it with your grandma, share it with your nieces, your nephews, your friends, your sisters. Did I get everybody? and stay tuned because February 3rd, I will be making a formal announcement on open submissions. And if you didn't know, season one of The Lost World of Short Stories is coming to an end, guys. There's only 2 more weeks left. And that means only 2 more Fridays left. So you don't want to miss any of it because we still have 2 amazing Feature Fridays coming up. So don't be sad. Don't cry. Because we will be back and I'm going to stop talking. And I hope you guys enjoy today's Feature Fridays. And like usual, I'll be back later on in the episode.
Turn Around by Ashley Watkins. Read by Jelena Phillips. It's the epidemic and the standards of this world that has caused us to hurt. It's the pressure we put on ourselves to want more. It's the ideal that we have to be more than versus less. I'm more willing to make sacrifices and crisscross just to get to top. At what point do we start to lose ourselves in the realm of this world? At what point does our good deeds turn into greed? Misguided and misled, we are left trying to figure it out. Do we chase our dreams and never turn around? Turn around to see what's on the other side of the threshold. Turn around to see who have paved the way for you. Turn around to see that you aren't alone. Turn around to get the clarity that you need to become whole. Turn around to see that your purpose is in front of you. Don't be afraid. Take a few more steps and you might run into your destiny. Turn around to face the fears you're holding on to. Turn around until you're certain about the path that you're on. Turn around to see how far you've come from where you started. Don't let others tell you when to stop. Don't let others tell you that you're not not able to accomplish and achieve something, not seeing a future in you because of your surroundings. Surround yourself with those who will be able to help guide you to the path of turning your purpose into reality. Hand Theory by Taylor Thigpen, read by Jelena Phillips. What is it about your obsession with hands? To be honest, I think it's quite creepy, Ariel shuddered. I didn't blame her. I barely understood it myself. And I surely wasn't shocked that she was curious as to why I was fascinated with hands. Hands were special. They were a lifeline. Hell, hands held secrets, and they were the reason I had never had a relationship past the first date. I sighed and looked down into the white ceramic cup that held the now lukewarm hot chocolate and remaining wisps of whipped cream. I lifted the cup to my lips to take a sip before setting it back down and trying to find a place to start. I have this theory, I started and looked down at my fingers. I immediately regretted saying those four words because now I couldn't take them back. No matter how much I wish I could swallow the words that flowed from my tongue in a rush, I couldn't. They were out there, and I could feel Ariel's eyes on me, egging me on to continue, but giving me the silence to do it on my own. I closed my eyes and looked down at my lap before meeting my best friend's eyes and quickly darting them back down. I have this theory about hands. Not about how big or small they are or the way they look. It's not about how manicured or unkempt they are, but about the way they fit in yours. You see, it takes a lot for fingers to perfectly intertwine together and feel comfortable. For example, my real dad? When I was a little girl, his hands didn't ever feel right when I had to hold it when I crossed the street with him. He left when I was 9. Remember how Jamie and I used to be friends? Before she turned her back on me, we went to the fair and she was scared of heights, so she held my hand the whole time. That's when I knew the friendship was bound to end. I don't know what it is about hands, but it feels like they're your soulmate. I mean, there are so many different types of soulmates anyways, right? You have friends, family, and of course, lovers that are soulmates. And I just, how can someone whose hand doesn't fit in yours, how are they supposed to stick around? It has to feel comfortable. It can't feel wrong. They just have to fit like the perfect pair of jeans with no belt. Sort of like a puzzle piece. Yeah. Like a puzzle piece. My finger traced the lip of my cup and my brow furrowed. It's probably shit, but it's just a theory.
Skin You Grace by Zakiya Snipe, read by Destiny Shireen. I love the color of my skin. Now, I know I've already started, but let me begin by saying this has nothing to do with power, Panthers, presidents, or anything else that's black. In fact, it has more to do with the slack I've been having to pick up from the lack of holding my chin up. Been up and down, back and forth with the figure in the mirror, attempting to configure her worth, played first fiddle but second string, to my own lack of self-esteem. Confidence was just a dream. And no wonder, in retrospect, I recollect being made subject to an elementary remnant of a paper bag test. That's right. Third grade schoolyard by the monkey bars. Two arms. Hold yours up to mine and let's see who's darker. You are, girl. What did it prove? Nothing. Just a deeper chasm in my already shattered self-image. Self-grimaced at the thought of being further set apart from my immature counterparts, taking their taunts as gospel, building as many walls as possible just to deliberate on how to disable the ability of their darts to penetrate. But now? Honey, I'm embracing this melanin, like I bought it with my very last $1 billion and 7 cents, or like it's heaven sent. Check the relevance. God, most reverend, reached down from heaven and grabbed a handful of earth, and with that dirt formed the rest of us. And if he makes no preference, best believe that's all the evidence I need. And I've been reaching towards confidence ever since. These mocha, mahogany, milk, chocolate rivers of God's own ink flow over this filthily and wonderfully made body. And it's funny how scientists think they're on the brink of being able to bottle it. So now my motto is, embrace the skin you grace. It was traced and placed upon your frame with an amount of care so great that the hue was yours exclusively. We never needed the month of January to end to indicate just how beautifully our black graces the palette of Earth's face so dutifully. So if while running the race you discover a decline in pace and find some space to sit and recline a taste, while everyone or no one's looking, find your face. Embrace the skin you grace.
I hope you guys enjoyed those poems for today's Feature Fridays. It was a really nice lineup. I was really excited about each of these pieces, each of these literature works, the voice actors and the people, the black women who wrote these pieces as well. It's just been a really good lineup. It's been a really good week. I started the line off specifically with Turnaround, written by Ashley Watkins, because it's kind of like a wake-up call. Like, did anybody else feel that? Like, it, you know, we are in this pandemic, you know, with, you know, COVID and everything that we've all been through last year of 2020 and just coming into 2021 and just how we're trying to heal and grow and, you know, and love and care for ourselves and care for other people. And some of us are dealing with, you know, grief and losing those who are not with us anymore. And so just not letting go of your dream, not letting go of hope, you know, just realizing how far you've come and, you know, don't forget that, like, this isn't the end, right? Like, if you're in a bad place, like, this isn't the end, even if it looks so dark and so grim right now. There is peace, still there for the taking. And so we can't forget that we're stronger than we think we are, right? That we're not alone. Not letting the world or society define who we are also, but instead paving our own path into the world. It's not about, or it's about, not letting go of that dream and putting it to work, but creating a plan and being consistent. And I mentioned briefly last week with you guys that I had thought of, you know, giving up on this podcast. And that was a very, you know, normal feeling, not specific on the podcast, but of giving up, of having fear, of having that, you know, small anxiety about that issue. And fear and anxiety and other emotions, you know, they're normal. But when they're negative, when they can be harmful to us, we can't make the choice to stay there, which is what I always say. You know, it's one thing to feel the emotions and you have it, you can get angry, you can get sad, you know, and all those other things, but don't stay there. Don't let it control you. And it's okay to have feelings, but just don't let them dictate what you're going to do or how you're going to act, about your own life. You know, they don't run you. So I just wanted to say that. And I really wanted to start off the Feature Fridays with that poem, because like I said, it is like a wake up call and it automatically grabbed my attention. I mean, and it's kind of like a declaration in a sorts. And so I just really appreciate that. I love the writing by Ashley, and I loved the reading and so by Miss Phillips, and it's just really great. So I really appreciate that. And then Hand Theory is really nice. It's a very short piece. I kind of thought I wasn't going to feature it on the podcast, but at the same time, I knew I was going to feature it on the podcast. I thought it was a little too short at first, but it ended up reading very beautifully, and so I was really excited about that. But I've always been amazed by hands. I know that sounds weird, 'cause the story is about hands, right? And so I've always been amazed by hands, and I know, like I said, I know that sounds weird, but the human body is amazing, y'all. Like, I like in the story, the hand and the hand positions mark certain times in the character's life. When the character talks about how it never felt right when she would hold her dad's hand when crossing the street, and then later on in her life, however old she was then, you know, he ends up leaving her at 9 in their family. And so she also marks, you know, the end of a friendship right at the fair when her friend like is holding on to her for dear life because she's afraid of heights. And she's like, my friend ain't never done this. And so I kind of knew that our friendship was going to like take a turn, and how it ended up taking a turn for the worse and not for the better. And I thought that was really interesting. And I think this beautifully speaks to body, you know, about body language, because most of our actions are nonverbal. And another one of my favorite parts about the poem, let's back it up. Because like I was saying, okay, so because most of our actions are nonverbal, you know, there's so many things that we're saying that if we just pay attention a little bit more, sometimes if we're a little bit more observant, you know, one person can say a thing, but the way that they're acting, the way that they're physically looking and moving, gives way to a lot more than what is being said. It's kind of like our actions speak louder than our words, right? We're all used to that phrase, but it absolutely has truth, which is why it's said so often. And because we've seen it in the work, right? And so that's really beautiful. I really love that. And then another thing, like I was saying before, that I really enjoyed about this poem is the mentioning of that there are different types of soulmates, that we have friends and family as soulmates. And I love this because nobody ever talks about it. And I think one year, I don't know how old I was, but I was talking about, I was mentioning to somebody that I was like, you know, soulmates can come in the form of like, you know, like she was saying, families and friends, and it doesn't have to be romantic. And the person was just like so shocked. They were like, what are you even talking about? Of course it has to be romantic. Like it has to be a lover. It has to be like a husband or a wife. That's why you got married to them. It has to be like some sort of romantic love in it to be called a soulmate. And I was like, I absolutely disagree. Just because what if you're not married and stuff? I still think that there are people that you are meant to walk this earth with. Like no matter the situation, we're not meant to live life alone. Like we, you know, we have God, but we also just have earthly people that we are meant to experience life with and lean on and, you know, have accountability for and share with and cry with. And I think that's just as important as romance and romantic love. And so, I just think that's important to note, that friendship love is just as important. And it can benefit your life a whole lot, not only while you're single, but when you end up with a romantic partner. And so, you know, society kind of gets lost in the idea of romance and romantic love and all of those things. And it kind of overclouds friendship and family and, you know, just coming together as a community and what we can get done just as a people. And so, you know, that's important too, but so are other things as well. And then the last poem that was featured, today was Skin You Grace, read by Kezia Snipe. First of all, I just really want to shout out Destiny Shireen, because girl, I love how you read this poem. If nobody really just like caught how she read that poem, play this back, because I just thought it was a beautiful reading. I love the writing of Kezia, and I love the reading by Destiny. It just really, you know, really makes me so excited. And Jelana Phillips is always slaying it in her poems, in her readings of the poems as well. But Destiny Shireen's reading for this was really great, and I was rooting for her behind the scenes. I'm like, come on, Destiny, like I really want you to submit a piece, because I really want to feature it for this Friday one, and I don't know if she knows that, but yes. So I'm really excited to be here with this piece, especially, and you know, because it's learning how to be confident in your skin and your body and your purpose. as a woman. And I love what she said when the poem says, "To my own lack of self-esteem, confidence was just a dream," right? I think there are many of us, if not now, then, you know, certainly then, when we didn't have enough confidence in ourselves to go for what we wanted to go for, you know, to be that woman, that girl that we've always wanted to be, you know, to reach for your dreams, you know, to have those healthy friendships and just making certain decisions in life that you need confidence for, right? You have to believe that you are worthy of it, to really start walking in it. It's not to say that it won't come even when you are insecure, because that certainly happens. We have people and situations come to us in our lives that help us present or bring out that confidence. But then also when we're working on it ourselves as well, we're able to pull it out of ourselves, and that's a different type of journey as well. When we're working on bringing out our confidence, when we're working on loving ourselves, when we're working on self-acceptance. So it becomes that journey, like how we've been talking about before, you know, self-love is not a phase. And, you know, even in the episode, I think it was Conform or Stand Out, when we were talking about, you know, not wearing a mask, not hiding your pain, not hiding your feelings from others, but feeling it, you know, walking in that truth, not letting it be you, but knowing that it's a part of you and that you can overcome those things. And just to know that, you know, like the poem said, and like the scripture says, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. So I think that's so important to realize and to understand. And, you know, yeah, that's, yeah. So I really love this poem. And from a person who used to, you know, not be confident in herself as much and not think she was worthy of love in certain places, I have certainly, you know, come out on the other side victorious in terms of confidence, in terms of a lot of things, but specifically in terms of confidence and self-acceptance and just really grasping and holding on to what I am worthy of, and that I am worthy, and so are you. And so I just encourage everyone to, you know, to just stay encouraged, to stay joyful, you know, to write out a list of things that that you are talented in, that you do love, that you like about yourself. I think journaling is so important, and I think it can help. It certainly helped me. So that's one way, you know, you can definitely grow in your own self journey. And so, yeah, so I just really love these poems. If you guys love these poems or, you know, really connected with, excuse me, if you really connected with one of these pieces, especially, you know, let me know. Message me on Instagram at Lauren Tate Books, Facebook at Lauren Tate. And if you don't have any social media, you can email me at TateLauren72@gmail.com and just, you know, share some feedback. I'd love to hear from you guys. And so coming up next, don't go anywhere, because, you know, the favorite part of Feature Friday, well, all of it is my favorite part. But we have a interview coming up with a wonderful woman named Maya Perkins, who is a self-published author, and she's just doing so many great things. Her information is in the bio. So if you want to just know more about her, it's in the bio. And yeah, she's going to tell you about herself and her book. and so, yeah, so stick around for that. And we'll be back.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. And Maya Perkins, that's the right pronunciation. Yeah, yes. Okay.
as my person.
Yes, I like that. So you wrote a book titled The Walking Nerve Ending, and yes. It is a collection of poems and reflections?
Yes, I did. Yes, it okay. is.
Yes. Okay, and you self-published it as well.
I did. So the story behind The Walking Nerve Ending is that I actually did my MFA at Sarah Lawrence many years ago, my Master's of Fine Arts in Creative Writing. And so a good portion of the work, body of work inside the work, Walking Nerve Ending, are poems that I worked in when I was at at Sarah Lawrence. And so my master's thesis at the time was called The Walking Nerve Ending.
Mm.
And I decided then, that was back in 2004 to 2006 is when I was at Sarah Lawrence. So I decided that if and when I ever publish my first book, no matter what, no matter when, it's going to be called The Walking Nerve Ending.
Oh, wow.
And so it would be, I don't know, 10, 11 years later, however many years it was, maybe 12 years later, that I finally brought that dream or like that vision, that goal into fruition with publishing The Walking Nerve Ending.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for telling that background story. Like,
you're welcome.
Yeah. Okay. So, wow. Yeah, that's really nice. I what also caught me too automatically, I mean, not just the title, but the cover of the book.
Yeah.
Right, because it has shades of like pinks and blues and yellows and oranges, and it's very floral. And then there's a woman on the cover as well. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote a note, but it like reminds me of like those old spiritual books that you find in like cool little bookstores.
Oh, wow.
And like, what was the creating process of how did you come up with that title?
Create the title. The title or the cover?
The cover, sorry. Thank you for correcting me.
Yes, no problem. So, this cover, the photo, it's actually, so the woman on the cover is me. So this is a really cool backstory that I actually have never told before, I don't think.
I'm honored.
Yeah, like not, right, like not in interviews and everything. And it doesn't even tend to come up in conversation, but it's, I find it quite, you know, interesting. Just the intuitive and collaborative process of creating this cover. So that photograph is me.
Okay.
Again, years ago. So I'm originally from Los Angeles. I moved to New York in 2004. And so a few years after I was living in New York, and at the time I had locks, like I had dreads. I'd had them for about 15 or 20 years. And so I met a loctician named Tando Kafele, and Kafele wanted me to do a photo shoot. And so he, you know, twisted my locks up into this ornate little crown looking style. And, you know, I did the photo shoot for Hype Hair magazine or something like that.
Okay.
And so I always loved one of the photos. And so when I decided again, you know, sometime later, years later, that I wanted a cover for The Walking Nerve Ending, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna take that photo from the Hype Hair photo shoot, and I'm gonna send it to my cousin-in-law, my cousin's husband at the time, who was a fine artist.
Okay.
And he does paintings, and I believe he does sculptures. I can't remember, but I know he takes down objects, and he creates these very large, beautiful, somewhat collage type of paintings.
Okay.
So I sent him the picture, and I told him that I wanted him to like make something of it so that I could use it possibly as a book cover. Mm. Well, Lauren, he went on to make this huge painting.
Oh,
he made this huge painting. And so like the top half
of
the photo from like this, the little bamboo kind of line to the very top, it's square shaped. So like that is a painting. And when you look at it, the photo doesn't really do it justice on the cover and like
when
you look at the digital image, but like when you look at it in person, like you see all of like these hand drawings in between, and you see like musical notes and like
all the
things that the book represents, like you see it in the fabric of this large painting, which is an interpretation of a photo of myself from, again, 15 years, maybe 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And so once he sent me the JPEGs, this was that was the only part of creating The Walking Nerve Ending, the book, that I contract it out to somebody else. So like once he sent me the JPEGs, it was another year or two. And when I finally decided the book was ready, I was able to go into like an image maker or like some type of book cover software.
Yeah.
And kind of, actually, that's not true. He made the whole thing. I forgot this bottom portion. Mm-hmm. The painting is only like the top square portion, but like when he gave me the JPEG for the cover, he put those bottom kind of birds of paradise looking.
Yes. Okay.
Images as well. So that's what I took. I took that and I was able to create, like use a book cover software just to like put the, like put my name and all these different things on the side. But mm-hmm. like Brandy Alexander, I can't believe I haven't said his name before now. There's a cocktail called Brandy Alexander, but that's also his name. So Brandy Alexander, you know, is Brand X. He is the artist that created the image for the Walking Nerve Ending.
Wow. Shout out to him.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It goes all the way back to like a hype hair. I think it's a hype hair. Let me see, because I have the magazine right here. Yep. Okay. A hype hair photo shoot.
Wow.
And some, I think it was even a photo. It wasn't even one of the photos from the photo shoot. It was like somebody took a snapshot of me, like a candid snapshot.
Wait, I love that.
And I for years, remember when there was MySpace? I don't know, you might be.
Yeah, no, I remember MySpace. Yeah.
So like it was my MySpace photo for a long time. And then Facebook started, it was my Facebook photo. So like, it, you know, I have like such a history with this photo.
Right.
It's amazing that it's only before, up until now, like that story has never come out.
Exactly. I'm so glad I asked, because I just knew that like so much was going on, and I was just so just captivated, like I said, by the colors. And so I was like, I need to know like this story. I was like, I don't know if it's gonna be a story, but I need to know like how it was created.
So thank you for asking.
Yes. And I also just love what you said, just telling about the journey of how that came to be, just all the intricate details, right, scattered everywhere, and how it came to be a whole picture. I mean, I really love that, because I think so much of what we do as artists isn't just a one whole collective linear journey. Like it's not one whole piece.
Oh my God. The key word you just said, linear, like this is such a non-linear pathway.
That's what I like about it. Like,
conception to actually holding the book in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
Upwards of 10 years and completely non-linear.
Yeah. And I think too, as, I mean, that's really great for you, because you were able to just embrace that, right? Along with it, I think a lot of us sometimes it's just like, you know, I want it to be this way, or I see the whole vision, and it's like, but let's just focus on like these little pieces, right? These little beautiful details that we have, and then let's see what we're going to create out of it. Mm-hmm. And that's how I felt about this book. And specifically, how did you, I know it was a part of, like you said, your schooling when you were writing your thesis, you said the title.
Yeah.
How did you come up with the title even then? Like,
yeah, well, you know, being a creative person, being an emo, being an empath, being ENFP, like just all of these things where I deeply feel. I just, at some point, again, in the early 2000s, some point between 2000 and 2004, I was like, you know, I feel so much. Sometimes I feel like my nerve endings that are inside of my body, I feel like they're exposed. Because I wear my heart on my, you know, on my sleeve. And it's just, you know, really sensitive at times. I mean, I can have a kind of like a stoic exterior, you know, about myself, but like, I just feel everything so deeply.
Wow. And so
I was like, gosh, I feel like I'm walking around with my nerve endings exposed.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you're dealing with like boys and life.
Yeah.
And, you know, all these crazy things, PMS. And
right.
That's where the walking nerve ending came from. Literally for years and years, I've kind of learned, I'm 41 now. So like,
okay.
I've learned how to manage my emotions a lot more than maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But I still feel things so deeply and inherently.
You
know, empathetic, the word.
And so, yes. My aunt and my one of my friends are they're empaths, and they tell me about their journeys all the time. Just in that they're like, it gets too much if you don't know how to navigate it or try to, figure it out. And they always tell me that that's exact. That's very beautiful how you said it, because that's exactly how they try to describe it. Like those emotions like that. They're like, it's like you're wearing your skin inside out.
That's exactly
And I'm like,
it.
that makes so much sense. And I think when people who are empaths understand how empaths work, then we're able to, share a little more kindness and be more gentle with you guys in how you experience the world, because that's a very different experience than the rest of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've traveled the world.
I've been across the world. Now, the funny thing is, I have traveled the world, but I've still yet to go to South America. And so, like, I
Okay.
as many countries, and I say only, but
Yeah.
I've only been to like maybe 16 or 17 countries, but
That's a nice
I
little
say only because I know people, I have friends that are, well more traveled than I am,
Yeah,
from
I
my
get
parents
you.
are like so well traveled. And so,
Man.
but yeah.
How that's crazy. How do you how did how does your traveling influence the pieces in this book?
Yes, that's a very good question. So, given that, so when I say that about 75% of the book was written in 2004 and 2006, I
Okay.
had not done that level of traveling yet. And so
Yeah.
the last 25% of poems or reflections that I wrote, I had some living to do, had some life experiences to have that include,
Yeah.
being able to, jump on a plane and go live in, the Middle East, or go and
Right.
stay in Hong Kong for 2 months, or to visit, five cities in South Africa in December, and so I think the biggest way that my travel has impacted the book is that because it took me so long to like create, to give birth to The Walking Nerve Ending, so to
Yeah.
speak. I literally had some living to do. And then once I did that living, like those stories, they stayed in gestation in my mind and in my memories for a very long time. And then finally, it was like Eureka struck in the summer of 2018, where I was like, you know what? I really want to finish The Walking Nerve Ending. Like I want the it was the pressure of I'll be turning 40 next year, at the time 2018, 2019. So I was like, I'll be turning 40 next year. And I really have been talking about this for so long. And like now is the time, like the fire was burning in my belly. And so that's when I was like, okay, well let's start pulling out some of those experiences. Hong Kong, South Africa, Helsinki, Thailand, Johannesburg, Cape Town, like start bringing those memories out into like a crafted form so that they can live in the book as well.
Wow, that's powerful. I like what you said about I mean, obviously, like you said, because you're 41, but that's just very just nice to hear, because I'm 25 and I know I got lots of living to do and I want to travel and explore places and see it in my writing. So I was just really just very in awe of just how you've traveled and been so many places. I mean, even those 16 and 17 countries, and then bringing them back into your work and then having that be so realistic and taking the readers on that journey with you. I think that's very beautiful and very powerful. So thank you
Yeah, thank you. And
for
can I just add
sharing.
to that? I mean, I believe so I drew, this is something that my second book, which has not been completed, but like my next book, it'll be on this experience. But like I drove Uber in New York City for 2 years. And so created a blog called Uberlicious, and it was all about, yeah, like
That's so dope.
the life of a educated Black woman who has decided to drive Uber, hijinks, five boroughs, New York, Connecticut, and the people that get in the car. And so, and everybody from Alec Baldwin, pre-Trump, but like Alec Baldwin to like, I don't know, some drag queens or whatever have in the car. And so one of my passengers that I'll never forget, he said that he identified himself as a writer. It was all a writer. question. I'm like, oh my God, I've never had a woman driver before. Because again, this was several years ago. I've never
had
a woman driver before. What made you start driving Uber? You know, canned answer. Well, I'm a freelance writer and it's a way for me to supplement income. So that always leads to, well, what type of writing? X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. So one of the passengers, he's like, well, you know, I too am a writer. He was German. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, one way I've always looked at my experiences in life is that the characters that I write about, my experiences are the clothes that they wear. And I can take, you know, certain clothes, you know, a particular piece of clothing or experience off of one, you know, out of the closet and put it onto a character or put it into a scenario. It was just a very, like, you know, eloquent way to
explain.
Yeah. I may not even really be explaining it as eloquently as he did, but he's just,
oh, wow.
Those experiences that you have, you take them and you put them onto your characters in your book, even if it's like nonfiction, which, you know, my writing is primarily nonfiction, you know,
yes. I'm still
taking those experiences and kind of putting them onto, you know, the character that is, you know, me in first person in my writing and everything. So.
Yeah, I love that. Right. He really did. I mean, like you said, I mean, even expressing it halfway, like he did put that very eloquently, though. I'm like just meditating on that sentence. I'm like, wow, that's a very good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
So you were talking about, or not now, but in the book, like different foods that you have, and I was just like, yes, because I'm kind of a foodie on some days, and I know most foodies are foodies all the time, but can you tell us about the food influences in your book and what that looked like?
So, you know, I don't know how politically correct this is, but like I'll always say, like, I'm a fat girl in a skinny girl body because I love good food. Like,
it's just,
I start singing when I'm eating something that's delicious. I like rocking back and forth.
Right.
And, I don't really, I'm not a slave to the scale. So it's just like, if I'm going to have, you know, the third helping, like I'm going to go for the third helping.
I agree.
It's just, you know, and I say fat girl in the most empowered way, like, you know, in a shameful way, but it's just, you know, for the amount of food that I, at least historically, my appetite has kind of diminished and the older I get, but like just the ability to enjoy my food and well-prepared food, I almost get offended if I'm given a plate of food or a dish and it's not delicious. I'm like, like if you go out to a restaurant and the food is mediocre, like I'm always so upset.
Yeah.
It angers me because it's like all of the ways that you, all of the ways that you could add seasoning to make it appropriate for my taste buds. Like, why does it taste like this? So, you know, anyway, so, you know, things that have been completely memorable, i.e. going to Helsinki on a layover, mind you. So like, you know, I start out a line, I'm not going to read this poem, but it's like, you know, something about, I never intended to go to Helsinki because it was the bottom of the bucket list.
You know what I mean?
Top of the bucket list, Antarctica, bottom of the bucket list, Helsinki. So, but, you know, I figured out how to book a flight, leaving Hong Kong, going to Thailand for about 9 or 10 hours, and then flying to Helsinki on the same ticket for 22 hours, and then finally to my destination in New York. And so when I got to Helsinki, it was completely like, what now? You know, and that's how, you know, just sidebar, that's a real, once outside opens up and like international borders open up and you decide, oh, you know, I want to go visit, you know, Ghana,
yeah.
I want to go to, you know, someplace on the other side of the world, Dubai, wherever. I always, for me, I don't know that I've suggested it ever, but I'll suggest to you because you, you know, you're here. I like to break up 14-hour trips by stopping in a country that's in the middle and then staying in that country for about 6 or 7, sometimes 9 to 22 hours. on an extended layover.
That makes sense.
That's how I've seen so many countries. It's not that I've necessarily spent, 10 days in every country.
That's what my mom says too, because she's a traveler.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I have to leave Hong Kong and come back to New York. Why not, spend a good 36 hours?
Exactly.
Two countries and just kind of like get a jam-packed experience in.
Yeah.
So yes, back to food, your question. So I stop at Helsinki. I'm at the Baltic, Hilton on the Baltic Sea. And, I do this when you get on the little board and you stand up and you're paddle boarding is what it's called.
So I'm in
the
Baltic. Yes.
Paddle boarding. And it's fascinating. The water's choppy and, I'm using up all this energy. And I'm
right.
Don't have a lot of money because I realize like the Hong Kong dollar where I've been is like, and when you compare it to the euro, it's like low chump change.
Okay.
So it's like I'm walking around and I see this restaurant on this boat. It's like a riverboat restaurant. And I'm like, oh, that looks interesting. Let's go down there, off the beaten path. And I'm looking at the menu and everything just looks so expensive. And I'm like, I love duck. That's another thing. Like I love duck. Just there's a good friend of mine, Buddy, in New York. And we go to, when outside was open, we go down to Chinatown and sit and have duck sometimes, So anyway, there's a duck sandwich. I think I want the duck sandwich, but it's so expensive. Like maybe I should try to get some chicken fingers and fries. It's not on the menu, but I'm just trying to be very American.
Right.
But it's like, girl, if you're in Helsinki, like if you don't go ahead and put your money together and buy the duck sandwich, sandwich, Lauren, to this day, that is one of the best sandwiches I've eaten in my life.
Wow. I believe it.
I do not know why that duck sandwich tasted so good. Part of me is like, are you just making it up at this point? Like, because, let me see, that was 2016, so it's 4 years ago. No, it wasn't 20, it was 2014, 8 years ago. I don't do math very well.
But me neither. Listen, we're writers, not mathematicians. It's fine.
The time ago. That sandwich is so good that, like, I in regular conversation, years later, I'm telling people, like, yo, I can't wait to go back to Helsinki. Oh, my God.
For the sandwich.
Hope the pandemic didn't shut down the Flying Dutch. Like, I really got to find that. I got to go right back to the Baltic Sea. I got to take that same walk. Like, I got to get that sandwich. So I'm trying to think if there's anything else in the book where I write about food in and of itself, but like duck.
That was good.
That was
good. Now I'm dreaming of the sandwich I ain't never had. Like
the flying, it was either the Flying Dutch or the Flying Dutchman. Like
that food. I love that. Okay. You can write that down.
Yeah. I sat right on and here I am. Helsinki went from being like, right. That's my bucket list. Like, okay. When I get back, I'm gonna have to go out for a flight.
Oh my goodness. So before you read a piece that you've prepared for us from the book, I just wanted to know, like, if you haven't answered it already, how did you end up even being a writer? Was it just always in your bones and you were like, this is exactly it? Or did you like stumble upon it? Like what happened?
Yeah, thank you for that question.
Yeah.
I am a second generation writer. And so I do believe I was born, with an innate ability to tell stories
and,
have a natural aptitude for words and language. And my father is a writer. He's an artist. He's a Renaissance man. He was a funk musician back in the 70s. And so just being around him growing up, like, being a poet and performing and doing very everybody knows about like the last poets out on the East Coast. We're here in the West Coast that there was the Watts Prophets, and so he was not per se a member of, he was like an ad hoc member, I guess you could say. Like he definitely would perform with them on several occasions back in the 70s, and just very performance art, slam poetry before it was called slam poetry.
Wow.
Just very performance based. And so I I believe I inherited a natural aptitude for writing. And then my mother was an educator. And so it was like you woke up on Saturdays and once I'm from LA. So you would go to the Los Angeles Public Library and you would sit in the reading room and you would pick out books that you wanted to bring home and read. Sweet Valley High, like read all of them, you know.
Yeah.
No,
I love that.
The Blue series, read all of them. You know, Omar Tyree, reading, you know, all of these, you know, all of these books from the 90s and from the 70s, from the 60s. You know, I grew to love autobiographies. Like I read you know, Simone's autobiography when I was really young, like maybe not
and
really
life changing.
Yeah, like 17 or 18 years old. I read her autobiography and just all kind of people. I've always been interested in people's lives and their stories and then they retell those stories.
Yeah.
And just being a creative and loving language, loving vocabulary. I was never really spelling bee, but I did like, you know, essay writing contest as a oratorical speaking contest when I was
I love that.
School. So, you know, it took me, but again, a jack of all trades, master of how I characterize myself. And so it took a long time for me to decide that I was going to do some type of writing on the academic level. So it was my master's degree that I did creative.
Okay.
I was more of visual and fine arts, art history when I was in undergrad. And so,
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and so, you know, I've been a creative and I've had a way with words and I anticipate moving forward that that will always be like my calling card, even though I have to do a lot of things. You know, I'm adept at a lot of things, but writing is what I am, what I do.
Yeah.
How I am, so.
Yeah, I love that. So you have a piece prepared for us from the book The Walking Nerve Ending. What's the title?
Yeah, so I'm gonna do the first poem in the book. It's called Grandma's Hands.
Okay. Wow, I have a short story in my book that's called Grandma's Hands. That's wild.
Yeah, you know, Bill Withers, man, Grandma's Hands.
Right.
Universal Black experience.
Exactly.
Take it further, like is the universal experience, because as he says, like we all have a grandmother.
Yes.
Or two or more. Some people end up with more than two grandmothers because there's, you know, bonus grandmothers and everything. But I have two grandmothers and I lost them both about 2 weeks apart 10 years ago. And my maternal grandmother, we called her Mame, she died the day after Christmas, December 26th. 2009.
Okay.
And my paternal grandmother, we called her grand, she died 2 weeks later, right after the start of the year. And so, whereas the poem itself was written for Mame, my maternal grandmother, like my paternal grandmother, grand, she also loved the poem. And since it's December, like it's coming up on the 10-year anniversary.
Right.
Well, the 10-year anniversary just passed for one and it's coming up.
Yes.
So you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I decided I would do this poem in their honor. And so, you ready?
Yep.
Okay, so Grandma's Hands. I usually sing like a little part of Bill Withers, but I don't know if I'm going to do it this time.
Okay. Whatever makes you comfortable.
Okay, so here we go. My Grandma's Hands. Grandma's hands, boy, they really came in handy. Bill Withers, that's a little epilogue. So my grandma's hands have a story to tell, not about how they ache and swell, but how they've guided her through life so well. This life, well planned according to the master's hand, has covered a multitude and planted roots that began in her own backyard. My grandma's hands have protected and touched the lives of those who needed them most. My grandma's hands were shields of comfort when youngins needed to be held close. My grandma's hands are tough. Her hands have picked loads of cotton and loads of laundry, wiped little bottoms and smacked big mouths, popped hands, pressed hair, plucked splinters, and burped everyone's babies. These hands have written checks that support individuals and families. Now, my grandma's hands, they've clapped and praised the Lord, clapped and praised the Lakers. Her hands have flipped the television from her sports to her stories while circling every word in the search as she eats her glazed donut. I've seen these hands fry chicken and bake 7-Up cakes as she sips her morning lukewarm coffee in the middle of the day. My grandma's hands have taken weekend trips to Vegas with high hopes of big earnings from the nickel slots. She'll journey back east or far east on a birthday cruise with a few of her kin. Her hands have nurtured many gardens of collards and mustard greens, red tomatoes, white daisies, roses pink, cultivating tirelessly, picking and pruning, arranging offspring into her prized bouquet to honor her life and to celebrate her love. My grandma's hands.
Wow, that was beautiful.
Thank you
for reading that. I getting in the practice of when people read their pieces or their work to just close my eyes and let it take me to that place. And I saw, right, my grandma's hands doing a lot of those things that all of our grandmas do across races and ethnicities. And yeah. I could really, picture that and the strength and the vulnerability and the kind of the matriarch of the family. There's such strength in our grandmothers, and it doesn't get talked about enough, right? Because though they aren't the very beginning, they are the start of what we know in our families.
Exactly. The queen of our family.
Yes. And here in America, you know, we really just don't appreciate our elders at all.
Yeah.
So it's very nice to hear your piece, Grandma's Hands, because you've obviously honored her and loved her when she was here and still do. That's just really great, especially in our community as Black people.
Yeah,
to just share those.
So
mm-hmm. Yes. So what do you want people who read The Walking Nerve Ending, what do you want them to take away from it?
I want people who read The Walking Nerve Ending mm-hmm. to take away shared experience.
Mm.
Even though I am a Black woman and I write from the Black woman perspective and experiences, yeah. I always say that this book is for everyone. This yeah. book is for men. This book is for Black women and all other women. This book is for men, Black men and all other men. This book yeah. is for young adults. This book is for grandmothers and great grandmothers. This book is for aunties. This book is for women who will never have children. You know, this book is for, you know, young adults. I have a girlfriend of mine who, a lifelong friend at this point, and she sent me video of her, I feel like he's 7 or 8-year-old son in grandma's hands, and you know, I would like, it brought me to tears. And so you know, mom, I loved Maya Angelou growing up. She just was like the standard bearer
for sure,
as a poet and as a autobiographer, or you know, writing her memoirs and everything. And so my father always likes to, you know, draw that comparison, like, you know, you can be your generation's Maya Angelou. You know, I don't want to be my generation's Maya Angelou. I want to be my generation's Maya Perkins. You know,
right. Exactly.
To stand in concert with a Maya Angelou or a Sonia Sanchez or Alice Walker, or, you know, all of those.
Yes.
For us. Although I don't really write fiction, but at this point, it could happen.
Yeah.
I'm a nonfiction writer, essayist, journalist, poet.
I love that. Yes.
Prose. But I want anybody who chooses to, it's an easy reader, you know, 125 pages.
Yeah.
And it, it really, there are themes, there's an arc and there are themes. And so like there's you know, romantic love is going to be an arc. Music, a lot of my friends are musicians, you know, so there's music and just New York City running around being footloose and fancy free.
Yeah.
There's travel, you know, the international.
Yes.
Shenanigans and right. You talked about, and there's the love of family, the love of mothers and grandmothers and fathers and grandfathers. And at the end of the day, it's like the lived human experience.
Yeah. I love that. So just the last question is, what are three things you would tell Black women writers?
Oh.
Off the top of your head.
Black women writers.
Or writers, you can just in general if you want to open.
Right. Well, that too. I'm like, not that, you kind of got me stumped because of all the things that I usually, you know, talk about and share, love to be voices of reason. I don't, I can't really. Okay, not that I can't. I can say something, you know. So I did spend a number of years as a professor, like an adjunct professor of writing. And so, you know, my suggestions are always along the lines of writing doesn't begin with taking your creative idea and putting it onto the page.
Mm-hmm.
Writing begins once your creative idea is on the page or on, you know, 7 pages or 72 pages.
Yeah.
The editing, the crafting, the detail, the taking out, the adding to, the taking the end and putting it at the top or taking the middle and moving it to the end. That's when true writing begins. That's when your work really begins to take shape and form.
Mm.
And so, you know, just not, you know, my one suggestion is like not rushing the process, like trust the process. Don't rush the process. So, you know, that's one.
That right there, that's good.
You know, going back to just letting things breathe, like let it breathe. Like if you don't let the first or second draft be the draft that you want the public to read, like don't be afraid to let things gestate and just sit for a while. You know, maybe you don't have 10 years, don't take 10 years, but maybe you don't have 10 months to let something sit. But like, just when you've let something sit for a while and then you come back and look at it, you're like, oh my God, like why? You know, I still can read The Walking Nerve Ending and find things that I would like to change. Which is why there's a volume.
Thank you for sharing that, because I need that piece of it.
Yes, there's that's why I have how do you call it? Version.
Second version.
That's why I have a second edition, because
that makes so much sense.
I kept looking, and the second edition came out like 1 year later. I did I fixed some things that just were bothering me, and then I added like one or two pieces. I love that.
That's how I feel about my first book that I have out right now. But I was like, it's just so wrong to like, well, obviously it's already out there, but like to physically
believe it, but second editions.
Yes, to physically change it, because I was like, I wrote it 5 years ago. So the way I wrote it 5 years ago just means something so strong to me.
Yes, darling, 2.0. Like,
yes. like exactly.
Like very, or even between, there's still two, you know, however many days left in 2020. Certainly, like there might be a Walking Nerve Ending third edition at some point. Probably not, but you know, so like that, I don't know if that was three already, but like,
yeah, that was good. No, that's like something to sit immense. I'm over here taking notes, like, thank you for that. And then
I do want to say the third thing is make no comparisons with yourself, your own writing, and like, brilliant Black woman who you love, you know what I mean? Like, don't use any wonderful, brilliant, exciting, you know, more acclaimed writer as your measuring stick for what it is that you feel like you're doing.
Yeah,
you're gonna do what you're put here to answer. I'm not to answer, but to to write what only you can write, you know, so don't compare it to anybody else.
That's a good one. Yeah. Especially when you have inspiration and people think that they need to be like what inspires them or something like that. Like it's, that's the point of inspiration, but you know, you take it and you weave it into your own stuff, not try to fit your stuff to, you know, match theirs. Yeah, I love that. Lastly, can you just tell everyone where they can find The Walking Nerve Ending?
Whoop, whoop. You can find The Walking Nerve Ending on Amazon.com. If you type in The Walking Nerve Ending, and you know, again, I like volume, I like the second edition. So if you type in The Walking Nerve Ending, second edition, the first edition may pop up, feel free to purchase that one. You can click on my name and then see like the second edition kind of fill in there on the menu in Amazon. You can also reach out to me on all of my social media, which is FlyMy16. That's FlyMai16. FlyMai16, and reach out, follow, share, DM me. I have copies. I do sell signed copies to readers. And on YouTube, Mai Perkins, MAI. Last name, PERKINS. And there are, you know, there's some new poems. Not just poems. There's all kind of things on my YouTube. So, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. This has been such a wonderful conversation. And your voice is so calming also. Oh,
thank you. I mean, I literally, you're the only person I probably have talked to today. So I'm in Los Angeles. I live in New York, but I'm in Los Angeles. Okay. I've been here for about, I don't know, a month or so. Mm-hmm. 3 months. I don't know. All the time. Time is standing still.
Right.
And so it's just it's hot, like the sun is shining, and you know, I'm looking at the lemon tree in the backyard. Like, I'm just very chill.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Mai, for talking with me and coming on the podcast when this uploads.
Thank you for offering, you know, just out of nowhere. It's been really delightful talking with you, and good luck with all of your writing as well.
You as well.
I know we're connected. I know on Instagram, and you know, so we'll stay in contact.
Yes, of course. Yes. Come back on the podcast anytime. All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
So if you've made it this far, thank you for listening. It means the world to me. And don't forget to subscribe, add to your favorites, review this episode or the podcast, and share, right? Share with anyone you can, and follow me on Instagram at Lauren Tate Books, Facebook at Lauren Tate, or if you don't have any social media and want to send me a message, you can email me at tatelauren72@gmail.com. And if you want to know more about me, you can visit my website, laurentatebooks.com, which is also where all the other contact information is up. Isn't that nice? So you guys already know, you know, whether we have 5 people or 500 people or more, the Lost World of Short Stories isn't going anywhere. And never, never forget that you are important, you are loved, and your story is worth being told.